It looks like an arch, said Tila.
Right. I shouldn't have laughed. We're lucky, though. We can leave our mistakes behind us, said Louis. All we have to do any time is get airborne. Nothing can catch us.
Some mistakes we must carry with us, said Speaker to Animals.
Funny you should say so.
Louis scratched absently at his nose, which was as numb as a block of wood. It would be healed before the anesthetic wore off. He made up his mind.
Nessus?
Yes, Louis.
I realized something back there. You've been claiming that you're insane because you demonstrate courage, right?
How tactful you are, Louis. Your delicacy of tongue...
Be serious. You and all the other puppeteers have been making the same wrong assumption. A puppeteer instinctively turns to run from danger, right?
Yes, Louis.
Wrong. A puppeteer instinctively turns away from danger. It's to free his hind leg for action. That hoof makes a deadly weapon, Nessus.
All in one motion, the puppeteer had spun on his forelegs and lashed out with his single hind leg. His heads were turned backward and spread wide, Louis remembered, to triangulate on his target. Nessus had accurately kicked a man's heart out through his splintered spine.
I could not run, he said. I would have been leaving my vehicle. That would have been dangerous.
But you didn't stop to think about it, said Louis. It was instinctive. You automatically turned your back on an enemy. Turn and kick. A sane puppeteer turns to fight, not to run. You're not crazy.
You are wrong, Louis. Most puppeteers run from danger.
But
the majority is always sane, Louis.
Herd animal. Louis gave it up. He lifted his eyes to watch the last sliver of sun disappear.
Some mistakes we must carry with us. But Speaker must have been thinking of something else when he said that.
Thinking of what?
At the zenith swarmed a ring of black rectangles. The one that hid the sun was framed in a pearly coronal glow. The blue ring world formed a paraboloid arch over it all, framed against a star-dotted sky. It looked like something done with a build-a-city set by a child too young to know what he was doing. Nessus had been steering when they left Zignamu Click-Click. Later he had turned the fleet over to Speaker. They had flown all night. Now, overhead, a brighter glow along one edge of the central shadow square showed that dawn was near. Sometime during these past hours, Louis had found a way to visualize the scale of the ring world. It involved a Mercator projection of the planet Earth, a common rectangular classroom wall map, but with the equator drawn to one-to-one scale. One could relief sculpt such a map so that standing near the equator would be exactly like standing on the real Earth, but one could draw 40 such maps edge-to-edge across the width of the ring world. Such a map would be greater in area than the Earth, but one could map it into the ring world's topography and look away for a moment and never be able to find it again. One could play cuter tricks than that given the tools that shape the ring world. Those matching salt oceans, one on each side of the ring, had each been larger in area than any world in human space. Continents, after all, were only large islands. One could map the Earth onto such an ocean and still have room left over at the borders.
I shouldn't have laughed, Louis told himself.
It took me long enough to grasp the scale of this artifact. Why should I expect the natives to be more sophisticated?
Nessus had seen it earlier. Night before last, when they had first seen the arch, Nessus had screamed and tried to hide.
Oh, what the tange!
It didn't matter. Not when all mistakes could be left behind at 1,200 miles per hour. Presently, Speaker called and turned control of the fleet over to Louis. Louis flew while Speaker slept. And dawn came on at 700 miles per second. The line dividing day from night is called the Terminator. On Earth, the Terminator is visible from the moon. It is visible from orbit. But it cannot be seen from the Earth's surface. But the straight lines dividing light from dark on the arch of the ring world were all terminators. From spinward, the terminator line swept toward the flycycle fleet. From ground to sky it ran, from infinity port
to infinity starboard. It came on like destiny made visible, a moving wall too big to go around. It arrived. The corona brightened overhead, then blazed as the withdrawing shadow square exposed a rim of solar disk. Louis contemplated the night to his left, the day on his right, the Terminator shadow receding across an endless plain. A strange dawn, staged for Louis Wu the tourist. Far to starboard, beyond where the land turned to haze, the sharp outlines of a mountain peak materialized in the new daylight. "Fist of God," said Louis Wu, tasting the rolling sound of it in his mouth. What a name for a mountain, but especially what a name for the greatest mountain in the world. Louis Wu, the man, ached. If his body didn't begin adjusting soon, his joints would freeze him in sitting position, and he'd never move again. Furthermore, his food bricks were beginning to taste like bricks. Moreover, his nose was still partly numb, and there still wasn't any coffee spigot. But Louis Wu the tourist was being royally entertained. Take the puppeteer flight reflex. Nobody had ever suspected that it might also be a fighting reflex. Nobody but Louis Wu. Take the starseed lure. What a poetic thing to leave lying about. A simple device invented thousands of years ago, Nessus had said, and no puppeteer had ever thought to mention it until yesterday. But puppeteers are so completely unpoetic. Did the puppeteers know why outsider ships followed starseeds? Did they gloat in the knowledge? Or had they learned that secret, then discarded it as irrelevant to the business of living forever? Nessus was out of the intercom circuit. Asleep, probably. Louis signaled him so that the puppeteer would see the light on his panel and call him when he woke. Did he know? Starseeds, mindless beings who swarmed in the galactic core. Their metabolism was the solar phoenix. Their food was the thinly spread hydrogen of interstellar space. Their motive power was a photon sail, enormous and highly reflective, controlled like a skydiver's parachute. A starseed's egg-laying flight commonly took it from the galactic axis out to the edge of intergalactic space, and then back, without the egg. The hatched starseed chick must find its own way home, riding the photon wind to the warm, hydrogen-rich core. Where the starseeds went, there went the outsiders. Why did outsiders follow starseeds? Whimsical question, though poetic. Maybe not so whimsical. Back around the middle of the first Man-Kazin War, a starseed had zigged instead of zagging. The outsider ship following it had cruised past Procyon, had paused long enough to sell We Made It, a hyperdrive shunt. The ship could as easily have wandered into Kazinti instead of human space. And hadn't the puppeteers been studying the Kazinti about that time? Tangit, that's what I get for letting my mind wander. Discipline, that's what I need. But hadn't they? Sure they had. Nessus had said so. The puppeteers had been researching the Kazinti, investigating whether they could be exterminated safely. Then the Man-Kazin War had solved their problem. An outsider ship had wandered into human space to sell We Made It a hyperdrive shunt, while the Kazinti armada was sweeping inward from the opposite border. Once human warships had the hyperdrive shunt, the Kazinti had ceased to be a threat to man and puppeteer alike. They wouldn't dare, Louis told himself. He was appalled. If Speaker ever... But that possibility was even worse. An experiment in selective breeding, said Louis. Selective, there ain't no justice breeding. But they used us. They used us. Yes, said Speaker to animals. For an instant, Louis was sure he had imagined it. Then he saw Speaker's transparent miniature image at the top of his dashboard. He had left the intercom open. Tanch for torment. You were listening. Not by choice, Louis. I neglected to switch off my intercom. Oh. Too late, Louis remembered Speaker grinning at him, supposedly out of hearing range, after Nessus had finished describing a starseed lure. Remembered that Kazinti ears were made to serve a hunting carnivore. Remembered that the Kazinti smile reflex is intended to free the teeth for battle. You mentioned selective breeding, said Speaker.
Well, I was just... Louis
floundered.